time to get sexy. So watch Secular Sexuality Live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTSS and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callsex.
And thank you, good people, for your thoughts and non-prayers. And welcome back to yet another episode of The Non-Profits. Just as a reminder, this show is a product of the Atheist Community of Austin, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to the separation of religion and government and the promotion of positive atheism. Today, I have with me today three other hosts, all of whom are very seasoned ACA show hosts. So, rather than introducing them and remembering which shows each one of them have been on, I'm going to let each of them say really quickly which different shows they've done. So I am your conductor, Laura, and I've been on The Nonprofits and Secular Sexuality. And let's start over at the far left with Nate.
Hey, folks. I am Nate Smith. I am one of the hosts of Secular Sexuality on Thursday nights. Tune in and watch. And I am here to just confirm the old adage that queer men are surrounded by lovely, talented, beautiful women.
Aw, why thank you. And Jenna.
Yeah, so I've, of course, been here with The Nonprofits. I think we're coming up to our year anniversary soon, so it's been almost a year for me. Yes. Very exciting. And I have appeared on Secular Sexuality, which was quite a while ago, several months. And I hope to get back to it. You know, work and everything else in between keeps me away from actually doing other things. But yeah. I've been on both those episodes, or both those shows, I should say. And yeah, that's it.
Awesome. And Aaron, I would love to introduce you, but since I gave everybody else the opportunity, I'll give you the opportunity as well. You are a first timer on Nonprofits, but where else can we find you?
Hi, I'm ex-Christian Aaron or Exian Aaron, and I am a fairly new host on Truth Wanted. So I've been there I've had a couple episodes so far. I'm having like so much fun. So now I'm getting to like test the waters over here at The Nonprofits.
Yes, and she is awesome. So if you haven't seen her on Nonprofits, go check out the shows that she's done. Okay, so as with all of our shows, oh, you're welcome, of course. as with all of our shows, links for all of the topics that we discussed today are going to be down in the notes section below or description section. So feel free, if you're watching this in hindsight, to pause the video and read up on the material yourself. Just don't forget to come back and finish watching what we have to say. So first, we are going to move into a very exciting social media article. Jenna, I think you should take this one away.
Yes. So this will lead us into our lovely little segment known as Shit Internet Apologists Say.
Shit Internet Apologists Say.
So, to no surprise, I'm sure all of us here are very familiar with the 1 Million Moms, famous big old Twitter group. So, of course, this stems from a little, you know, rant of them complaining about a nothing burger. So this actual reference comes from the Friendly Atheist site, and it references one of the 1 million moms known as Monica. And she previously has had numerous rants about, you know, whatever she wants to complain about. But this most recent one involved a new non-hormonal birth control drug called Phixie. So I won't go too much into what the drug is because I read about it and know too much of it. But it is a form of birth control in which you inject into your lady parts to protect you against obviously getting pregnant. And it's basically it's a commercial or an ad was placed by a famous actress, a known actress, in which the setting for the commercial is basically the actress in her home, which clearly the ad represents her home as the inside of her vagina. And so obviously that ticked her off. So there's one. And so she goes on about saying, oh, I make my own rules about my home and I take control of my personal hygiene, things like that. Like really non-explicit, very positive. Like obviously if you get what she's referencing, you get and understand it. And it's not anything too aggressively persuasive or over the top. And of course, the ad continues about going through the medication and explaining how it's in, taken. And then it kind of ends in a form of the actress getting pretty much she's going out on a date, but it's kind of like she's leaving her home or she's introducing someone into her home after she instills the medication to reference, you know, she's about to do sexual activity, but whatever. Not to be too overly graphic. It's too early and it's not. Not Thursday. But
it's Thursday course, somewhere, Jenna.
It is.
Wednesday is the new Thursday. Sunday is the new Thursday.
If only it were Thursday. But obviously, well, I mean, obvious to this Twitter mom, there are a couple things that she was so totally against. One, the over to her, in her words, overly aggressive sexual references in the ad, the where she thinks that, you know, it's putting her children and other children in danger because she claims it was on during late night on Nickelodeon or whatever, and it ran late. And so, oh, my child can see that ad and they'll have questions and not understand and wah, wah, wah. And it's just there's a very good point that the author makes in the article in which that Monica seriously cannot have an adult conversation when it comes to, you know, sexual health and education, because obviously this ad doesn't do anything. And by all means, the link for this article is in the description and the ad is right in there. Check it out for yourselves. It's really very harmless. And so, you know, it's nothing that we haven't heard before from 1 million moms and others that complain about things in the media that is against, you know, Christian values, like, you know, views of homosexual couples, children referencing that they have two mommies or two daddies, children expressing their need, feeling that they're different orientation wise and this, that, and the other. So, yeah, that's pretty much the basis of her complaint.
So it's sort of an ongoing sensitization or oversensitization to anything that sort of shakes or rocks one's personal values, right? And that's where I have the biggest issue of it is sex is a very natural, normal human act, right? And sexual health is way, way important. And knowing about what options are out there is important. And with the commercial being so, it was all innuendo, right? So if you're an adult, you're definitely going to pick up on it. If you're a five-year-old child, you're gonna be like, oh, her pretty pink house and her jammies look comfortable, right? And that's about all you're gonna get out of it, right? But certainly I think that it's a conversation that needs to be had, and that even if a child does pick up on things and ask some questions, those are questions that can be reasonably addressed by an adult who actually acts like an adult. So really what to me this spoke to was that there's still such a huge demographic of people out there. I say huge, this is one woman, but just the fact that they have these kinds of movements. There are still so many people out there that are very, very sensitive to topics that may, quote unquote, personally offend them or that they're not comfortable talking about. And so suddenly it becomes highly inappropriate on behalf of the ad maker or the TV station airing it.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Oh, go ahead, Nate.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah. Although to characterize 1 million moms as a movement, I don't know. One of the things I like about Hemant is that every time he mentions 1 million moms, he gives their current Twitter follower count.
Which is?
I think they're up to like 4,178.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, at the they haven't even hit five digits. Yeah. Like,
that's a little bit shy of a million. I mean, they're getting there.
Well, it's fair to say.
That's different math.
Yeah. Well, they're about as good at math as they are at sex ed. Let's just leave it at that. Like, this is not a movement. This is just a bunch of
angry
pearl clutching. Well, I look at them kind of as victims of indoctrination, right?
Like, that's a really good point.
Yeah, and they've been conditioned to think and to have this this response to any conversation about sex that comes up. Like, I don't know if Monica heard anything after the first vagina. Mm-hmm. You know, I think soon as she heard that word, and immediately she's like, whoa, can't talk about that. How dare you?
Yeah, you know, to be clear, and I have to recall, and I apologize, Laura. I watched the ad a couple times. I don't even believe it. She says vagina, or it's just the person while she's, you know, in the commercial that is the voiceover does say vagina, but in reference to explaining how the medication works or something like that. I don't even think the actress herself says it. It's the visualness.
I think they do. And it's right at the very beginning, what Nate was saying. Yeah. Like, I think that honestly, like, the commercial came on, she heard the anatomically correct usage of the word and just closed her ears. And everything from that point on is offensive.
Yeah.
And the thing that I kept thinking about is just that she's probably just like so appalled that this woman is being so shameless. Mm-hmm. Like, she's just out there talking about her body, and the whole commercial is like very pro body, like your autonomy, and like that's very offensive too, especially like very strict fundamentalist Christians.
Yeah, I think that Nate and you hit the nail right on the head, that it really is like, okay, so the word vagina is somehow very, very, very taboo in religious culture. And I'm not even sure exactly why. I am, but my brain doesn't like to acknowledge it. My brain doesn't like to wrap around it and give it any sort of credence.
Yeah.
Right. But if my child were to overhear that commercial and say, like, Mom, why are they talking about a vagina, or what's a vagina or whatever? Well, first of all, my kids would already know what a vagina and a penis is, because we always used medically correct terms. Yeah.
Same.
And, yeah. Like, even as a toddler, it was their penis and their vagina. It wasn't their like hoo-ha or special spot.
Yes. Know? Yes, Laura. Yes. So,
So it would be really, really easy for me to say, well, this cream is something that's for the health of a woman. It goes in her vagina and it keeps her healthy. And I wouldn't even have to answer beyond that unless they pressed it. So for me, it really is like they take sensitivities over health and wellness, and to not even be able to use the word vagina in a commercial, to me, it really, really speaks to the shame that these people have to feel over their own bodies. Like, she has one, presumably, right? Yeah. And how ashamed is she of her own and of owning one, right? That she can't even talk about it.
I think it's almost like a call out, like an accidental self-own, by the fact that like she's getting so upset by it, because that's evidence. Like, that is a stark reminder that in her culture, like in the Christian culture in the group, they don't talk about sex with their kids. If they do, it's in a very like hushed tone, and it's all very considered like something that is kind of naughty, and like you're not supposed to talk about it. And I think just the very fact that the ad opens up with just like a blatant usage of the correct word, and the fact that she kind of, you know, I could feel her shrinking away when I think about what I was like when I was a Christian, like, oh my God, you're not supposed to say that out loud. That's a naughty word, but it's not, it's just a correct usage. And I think that you're exactly right, that if you're teaching your kids the proper usage of the proper names for their body parts, like, it shouldn't come across as like alarming. And it shouldn't be such a big deal. And a lot of you have mentioned already that like it's the innuendo is there for like the adult watchers, and I think it would go over most of the kids' head. And that, like, my takeaway from this is like, as a Christian mom, she might thinking like, what is this going to do for my kid? And I think that, if anything, it might cause them to be curious, and she's maybe, you know, not willing to have that conversation with her kids. And so, that's kind of my thoughts on it. It's just, what are you so afraid of talking to your kids about sex and making sure that they're well-informed? I don't know.
I know. I honestly would like to know more about the intentions and motivations behind it, other than just, ooh, I'm offended. Because you're right. If it's not just about like birth control in general, what is it about? Like, is it having that conversation with your kids about safe sex, when what you really want to say is just don't have it?
Don't do it. Yeah.
Right. And so now you have to have a more nuanced conversation, which even that to me would be simple. Hey, some married couples don't want to have kids at certain times, so they'll use birth control to stop themselves from having kids. I mean, you could literally mold the message into your own twisted, demented sort of way, and it still explains the commercial, honestly, you know. So I think you're right. I think, and I'd love to know her perspective more and her comfort levels more, because my mind snaps to that judgment too of, well, she's just not comfortable talking about sex at all with her kids. or with kids in general.
I think you're bang on with that. And one of the last things that I heard about 1 million moms getting upset about, 4,170.
I was going to say that.
One of the last things I remember them getting all bent out of shape about was the cartoon, the Muppets cartoon, where Gonzo dresses, puts on a dress and goes to a party. And it was the same thing. It's like, what if my child sees this? How am I going to explain this to
my
child?
Heaven forbid.
You could say, well, Gonzo put on a dress to go to a party. That's what happens. It's just that simple. I think it's really, she is a victim of the infantilization of sex ed and talking to your kids about sex. When I was moderating for Recovering from Religion, someone asked me, how could you inoculate your child from sexual abuse? Like what could one do? When we were talking about the Catholic sex scandal. And I'm like, one of the best things you can do is not to use those terms like PP and wee wee, like just call it a penis, call it a vagina. Don't attach that shame that you need to use a different word so that, you know, we can disguise our conversation, right? There's no need to disguise it. And if there's no need to disguise that conversation, then there's no need to disguise something that your child might need to tell you later on down the road. So, you know, you can approach these difficult subjects like birth control and sexuality from a healthy perspective. And this ad is actually a pretty humorous one. Like the metaphor is very strong and it's actually a pretty funny ad. I loved it. Yeah. I thought it was great.
Something else that was in, I can't remember who put it in their notes. I think it was Jenna, talked about female empowerment. Like this commercial is definitely huge on female empowerment. This is my house. In other words, this is my vagina. I decide what goes inside of it. I decide how things work, and I decide what kinds of medicines or whatever I use as prevention. So she was very like my body, my choice, and very self-empowering. And I liked the message of like the whole I'm in charge of this house, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that was
exactly.
And I know, Jenna, go ahead. Yeah, because I know that you were going to probably go back on that.
There's a lot I want to say, but I'll keep it short. But in agreement to all of you and in referencing to, you know, and Nate, you put it beautifully, just like Monica, like many others that are not necessarily considered one of those twinner moms, just an average person that has those same basic Christian values that they follow as far as, you know, the no sex before marriage or, you know, not talking about it or using covering language to say, don't do it. Because I know my sex talk from my parents was just don't come home with baggage. That was it.
So there's good and bad education then on all sides.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And the unfortunate thing about it is that there is study to, you know, the approach of how you educate not just children, but anyone. If you tell them no, they're going to be more curious and explore it on their own. They're going to try and find out one way or another versus you can tailor and structure the conversation, albeit with the most appropriate information, the way that you want to, because you're their parents for one. So if you practice that, but I think the added unfortunate compounding issue to that is they themselves didn't have that conversation with their parents potentially. And so the trend continues. And then you have people to this day that either are younger than myself or older that find themselves conflicted and feel shame with the thought of even thinking about sex, even with not being religious, that shame and that guilt they still carry over because they don't, they've been so heavily, you know, hurt and forced to think that, you know, I can't do such and such things to my body, or I can't say, you know, dirty words to someone over the phone, or I can't watch pornography on the internet or things like that, you know, and that goes both for men and women. Because you find that even with minority males, they run with issues of, you know, sex as well, because they're looked upon as, and this is very interesting, they're looked upon as a certain, you know, value or fantasy type of picture when it comes to a Black man. And so when they're met with that and they don't represent that themselves, they have that conflict as well. So you can only imagine just, yes, a lot of shame. Yeah. So you can only imagine what men and women of different demographics go through and then not being able to receive the appropriate education behind it, as you both all demonstrated, not using blanketed words, saying penis, saying vagina, saying the right terminology to explain what's going on. And that way they can make sound decisions and continue to ask questions and be open with you.
Yeah.
I love that. Like, go ahead, Nate.
That's so smart. No, go, you go ahead, Laura.
I was just gonna say, when you talk about getting curious and asking the questions, like, if this commercial does that in any way, whether it's a child, which I don't think it would be based on the times that it airs, but I'm thinking more like teenager or young adult, even if it's not to sell birth control to that person, but that person ends up getting curious and asking the questions, I still see this commercial as a overall positive a motivating factor. So if it gets you to ask questions about different types of birth controls or about different sex practices or anything like that, then good on you. If it gets you thinking about it or talking about it, like, that's perfect. But what I think is unfortunate is when it makes people mad and like the backlash. So in this particular case, I'm sorry, this is gonna be like a tongue twister. She is so shut down that whatever people say to her now in response to her opinion is just going to make her dig in deeper. Right.
Yep.
But I do like what Jenna says about, like, hey, if this kind of stuff makes you curious, ask more questions and talk to the kids and let them be curious about it. Yeah.
Yes. It definitely will serve a better benefit versus, you know, you're running into issues of unwanted pregnancies and things with situations with not understanding if someone is speaking to you inappropriately or touching you inappropriately, not knowing what that should feel like and how you should feel about a situation if you find yourself there, because things happen, life happens, and it's unfortunate and sad. But when a person doesn't have a basic understanding of their own body and the knowledge of their body and how they should feel or how not to feel given any situation, and if they're truly ready to do such things, or if they find themselves forced to do things that they should not be forced to do, that's important. So this I find so much broader understanding and deeper conversations with each piece, segment, articles that we do, because it draws out more of the conversation and curiosity, even for myself, to understand and know that there are deeper issues than just what's presented to us on the surface.
Yeah.
Bingo.
Yeah,
that's great. That's great.
Yeah. And people don't give kids enough credit. You know, in this case especially, she's not giving her children enough credit. But even me, being an atheist for, you know, nearly 30 years now, still, I didn't give my own children enough credit when I sort of came out to them, because I have three biological children. Their mother and I were the first people that each other came out to as queer. And when my son was about, I think he was about 10, and I decided to have the talk with him about my partner and I, and tell him that, you know, I sat him down. I'm like, hey, we got to have a talk real quick. Put the game down. He's like, okay. He sat down. I'm like, so you know that he and I are more than just friends, right? He's like, well, yeah, Dad. I know. I'm like, okay, well, we're a couple. He's like, well, yeah, you sleep in the same bed. I'm not stupid. Mm-hmm. Was this the big talk? Was this it? And I'm like, yeah, yeah, that was it.
I don't know why. Like, okay. I don't know why it felt like that was just so precious.
It's adorable.
That's literally how it went down, too. He was like,
I think your point there is really good, though, is that there's a naivety that we, or a lot of like the parents responding to it like this. Like, there's an idea that kids can be kept in this little bubble and that they're never going to learn things and like discover things. And like they will, if you don't have a conversation with them about these things, like they're going to learn about it somewhere else. And like your story is a good example. My kids know a whole bunch of stuff that I'm happy that they're aware of, and we have a really good open conversation about it. And I'm, you know, you want them to be able to just come to you and have this kind of free forum conversation, open dialogue. There's nothing off the table. You can ask me about anything. There's no hot buttons. You can, you know, no words, no descriptions, like come talk to me about anything. I love that story about your kids. That's awesome.
You know, I will say, because I know now I know all of you are parents and I'm not. So that definitely empowers me when I potentially have my own children to know and feel comfort that there are modern parents mm-hmm. that are using the right terminology and language to educate their children, because I'm all about health education. I work within that kind of department myself as a nurse. So striving to, you know, relay that information to my patients, especially if it involves parenting or anything that I happen to teach or relate to patients now, I feel inspired. So thank you. Thank you three for being great parents and the rest of you out there that are parents.
Well, thank you. And I like that this article, that we ended it on a positive note and on more positive messaging, especially in terms of sex education. So as we move on from this, I think if there's any takeaway that we can have from it, it's that this commercial, whatever your feelings are about it, it gets the conversation started and it helps to educate. And I love that you all took it in such a positive direction. So we are going to move on. And I have some really good news. I know that you guys may have already heard it before, but because of all your dedicated, because of all the dedicated viewers that we have spreading all the good news of the faithless nonprofits, dude, we are now over 9,000 subscribers, creeping up on 10. Yeah. So thank you all who continue to watch, and thank you all for the new subscribers who are getting us there. That's really a big deal. And
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, because this is why it's such a big deal. Once we hit 10,000 subscribers, we can start doing fundraisers. Which is cool. So if you guys are watching us now and you haven't subscribed yet, help us get there by hitting that subscribe button. You can also help, like if you're already subscribed, by sharing the link with your friends, your family members, your coworkers, anybody, even like that neighbor guy that you don't really like so much, share it with him, anyone and everyone. Once you guys subscribe, another thing you can do to help us out is hit that like button. And to help yourself out, you can hit that notification bell, because then you will always know when we're going on. Just as a reminder, we do premiere every Sunday at 3 p.m. Central, but we all get busy, so those reminders are really, really nice to have. So one more thing, in case you guys are just like hiding under a rock or something, the Atheist Community of Austin has a new YouTube channel. It's actually not new. It's been around for a little while, but check out the Atheist Experience Network. So this is like a one-stop shop for all of our shows in podcast form, which is really awesome. They've kind of like compiled it all and put it in one place. So subscribe at tiny.cc/AENpodcasts to listen to not only all of the episodes of the nonprofits, but also the Atheist Experience, Secular Sexuality, and all of the other ACA shows. Okay, so we are going to move on to segment two, and we are going to be talking about abortion in the Bible. So Erin, take it away for us.
Okay, so this one got my blood boiling. So this next article is from Salon.com, and it's called "Evangelical Theology is What Made the Texas Abortion Possible." Texas Abortion Outrage Possible. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's talking about the influence of like evangelical theology and why there was such a strong push towards getting that ban in from the 6-week mark. And what I found really interesting about this article, it's by Nathaniel Manderson, and he's actually a Christian. And the whole article, he's actually talking about how he sees the hypocrisy coming forth in this, like, you know, this modern evangelical movement that's kind of getting so involved in politics and aligning themselves with Republican Party. And so he talks a lot about just how, like, it's so detached from the message of, you know, the gospel. If I'm looking at it through a Christian lens here, it's so detached, this kind of compassionless stance that they're taking. And the other thing about their theology being like based on the reasoning for why they chose that part and why because they believe that conception starts at birth. And the reason why this got my blood boiling is because, as typical with evangelicalism, I have found is that this isn't actually very closely linked to what the Bible actually teaches. Once again, I feel like they're not actually reading their own book. And so we can look at, like, in the Bible, even in the Old Testament and New Testament, they have like even different takes, like the views are different. There's not a lot of support that they can say that why it has to start at conception. And so it's kind of like this fanaticalism about this calling abortion murder because of conception being from the very, or sorry, from that life begins exactly at conception. And the problem I have with this is that they can't actually support this with biblical scriptures. In fact, I would even argue that there's a lot of scripture that goes kind of against that idea that life, like in rabbinic Judaism, there's a lot, even in the Old Testament and you know, in the other writings, like there's a lot of talking about like that life begins at first breath. In one of the other ones, that life begins, you know, part way through birth. And there's nothing in their New Testament scripture that talks about it. And most evangelicals take a stance on some sort of stance on inerrancy. So they're not, they're being really hypocritical is what I'm saying. And the other thing that really frustrated me about this article, or no, that I actually agree with this Christian writer here, is that when I say it's so detached from the, like the original message of the gospel, a lot of the message that Jesus, whether you have whatever opinions you have about Jesus, one of the things he did say was to take care of the poor. And I think the evangelicals in the America right now are not, they're just coincidentally ignoring the data of, you know, who is most affected by unwanted pregnancies, and that's people who are in poverty. And so rather than looking for ways to pull people out of poverty, they're actually working actively to perpetuate that cycle.
Yeah, I think you bring up a really, really interesting point with a tie between the two, because I think there's this sort of perception out there that like abortion is just sort of this convenient form of birth control. Like, oh, okay, I've got a good living, I've got a career, birth control didn't work, or I somehow ended up pregnant, so I'm just going to go terminate my pregnancy, which even if that did happen, that's well and good and fine, right? We can have that conversation about the morality of that or whatever in a separate conversation. But the truth of the matter is that abortion sometimes is sort of more of a desperate last ditch effort. It's not this flippant, well, I'm just going to use it as birth control because oopsie, right? Like the way that they portray it, it's really more like I'm in a situation here where I can't necessarily afford to raise a child, or this isn't a good situation for me or for the child. And there's this sort of disregard for the quality of life once the child is born. It's like there's a really, really, really high regard for the life of the child in the womb.
Yeah.
But what happens after the child, once it's born, well, you know, that parent's a bad parent, or that parent should be working harder to provide for them, or, you know, whatever the case may be. But you're right to call out the link between taking care of the poor and why the abortion conversation can be such a big deal.
Yeah. And I'm not trying to make the link that everybody who has an abortion is in poverty, yeah. But I'm just, it's one of those areas that like we have data about this. We know what areas, have the highest rates of abortion. We know what causes, we know, that when you limit and restrict abortion, that it doesn't decrease the amount of abortions. It just decreases the access to safe abortions. And it pushes people who may already be in a position where they are struggling with finances to seek their medical treatment outside of their state or outside of their country in some cases. And it's just like, it's unbelievably hypocritical. And like you said, like the safety and the concern for the baby doesn't go much further than just getting them to the end of the pregnancy. And that's really, it's a disgusting kind of hypocrisy that gets my blood boiling.
Oh, me too. It's like, exactly like you said, they're like, yeah, we care about the life of your child until it's born. And then we're going to go full libertarian and be like, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And you just got to work harder and earn your way. No handouts. Right. Yeah. Like,
exactly.
It doesn't make any sense. And if I could just nerd out for a quick second here and point out a little more hypocrisy, that the opposition of religion to Planned Parenthood and its alignment with the right wing is it's a newer thing than most people realize. Like, George W. Bush, who is as Republican as you get, actually had the nickname Rubbers because of his support for family planning. His father, Prescott, was Planned Parenthood's treasurer, right? He only reversed his position on abortion when he joined Reagan's campaign. So for completely political reasons, not because of his convictions, not because of his deeply held religious beliefs, it was for political gain. Mm-hmm. And then in 89, he withholds funding for the UN Population Fund, the same program that he had championed only two decades earlier. Like, there's literally zero integrity in this movement. It's just about control. That's it.
It goes deeper than that, even before that, because the notion that Christianity is trying to, or evangelical Christians are trying to attribute abortion being against their values, that it's not true. There's, and like Aaron was saying, and I have scripture, pulled scripture to demonstrate that, that there is no reference to the application of law that Texas is doing and other states are trying to do in correlation with what Christian scripture says. And it goes, yeah. I say it goes deeper because this goes back to late 60s. It's more, the abortion issue is not anything regarding religious value. It's a racial segregation thing, because there was a case back in the late 60s in which Bob Jones University was not trying to integrate their schools. And, you know, those big ups like Bob Jones, the Falwells, the Ray Wrights, mm-hmm. they were all about that. They're all about, you know, keeping the races separate. And so they demonstrated their effectiveness because one particular family was trying to sue a school because of, you know, they're trying to integrate at that time, in which, you know, it, and it bleeds into the IRS tax exemption status, to which the Bob Jones University was trying to hold on to that, or file for that tax exempt status, prefacing religious views and values and ideologies. And they utilized, prior to this, and I will say, prior to this, abortion for Christians was a non-issue. They had no standing statement for it. They regarded it as a Catholic issue at that time. And then it only transitioned to evangelical Christianity only when Bob Jones made it and positioned it to be true that they were holding on to their religious values and wanting to still continue with their tax exemption to win that case because of the value of abortion. They used that language, and it has carried through up until now. So in biblical times, this was not a thing. And even scripture can tell you, Exodus 21, 22, where it verifies if two men are fighting close to a pregnant woman and they bump her and hurt her, but they don't hurt the child, then the husband of that woman finds the men for X amount of money or whatever. I'm saying this verbatim, but I'm not going to say the scripture because it's King James and it's something like that. Too much. Yeah.
It was considered even, property damage, right? It was considered correct. Property damage. So
exactly.
Yeah. And the yeah. There's lots of
even Leviticus. Yeah.
No, you go ahead.
No, go ahead. Even in Leviticus and Numbers, same. Sorry. I can rant about this because I've had a lot of talks. And even I had this talk with you, Laura, recently. Leviticus and Numbers, they reference, even they actually put the value of and the timeline in which an unborn child has a personhood and how much of how many such shekels that person gets. So, for instance, I believe either in Numbers or Leviticus, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's in there, in which a child between the age of 1 month up to 5 is considered a person, or it would be liable for 5 shekels of something or rather. I don't remember exactly why or the reasoning behind it. I didn't want to read too much. But in, I would say, Numbers, it does say that a child above the age of 1 month is considered a citizen, that they should be counted. But anything younger than that obviously says they're not a person. They don't even regard it as human. Ergo, them are Christians trying to attribute personhood to an unborn fetus. And the law that Texas is trying to do by putting this whole 6-week lockdown on something that's growing inside you, that's not even considered human.
When you start talking about Christian justification, and this is something that he kind of talks on too in his article, but so there is no justification against abortion in the Bible. There's nowhere where it's explicit, no. Right? But there is explicit pro-abortion verses in the Bible. And I know, Numbers 5, 11 through 31.
Yep. Gives instructions. For the unfaithful spouse or whatever. Yeah.
So the idea is that you make a concoction and cause the woman to abort. And if she aborts, then she was pregnant and therefore she had cheated on you, right? If she wasn't pregnant, then she doesn't abort. And then she was faithful to you. Right. And so the idea that, so when you read the Bible, a lot of people can take the same verses and translate them for or against any specific thing, right? Like people say that all the time with religious books, that whatever your stance is, you can pretty much justify it in your religious text. But this is kind of one of those stances where I find that any sort of justification is very, very, very weak and tenuous at best. It goes back to the whole, like, well, God values life. And even that can be argued in the Bible, that he doesn't indeed value life.
He values
He drowned the whole world almost at one point.
Yeah. right.
In the narrative. Even babies and pregnant women.
Right, yeah. And so this is one of those arguments where there isn't any real strong, you know, well, it could be interpreted this way or it could be interpreted that way. There's a pretty strong case against this evangelical push to outlaw abortions. And I wanted to pull a quote out that he said really quick that I thought was really, really. So he says, "These modern day hypocrites have won a victory for themselves while ignoring everything it means to be a follower of Christ." And this is something that Jenna kind of spoke of. "I am disgusted," he says. "If Christ did return, it would be these evangelicals who would hang him on the cross again. They are the evil that Christ warned his followers about long ago." Right. So he kind of calls out other Christians and doesn't give them that, well, I mean, you could interpret it this way or that way. He's very, very, just very vehement in his position against.
He's accusatory. He's taking a solid stance. Yeah. That they are wrong.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's just. And it's so funny because just there is a mention of an article I pulled from Politico that is dated about 2014, in which I got more in depth about the reasoning of it not being more of a religious value, but more a racial segregation type of issue for them to grow and keep and hold on to their Texas-M status for that particular school. Is there are previous references, even at the time of Roe versus Wade, where known political standing Christians still claim that there was no, they didn't hold a hard stance with abortion. And they seemingly pretty much said, well, yeah, it's wrong, but, you know, it should be for the benefit of the woman, and if there is a health risk, and if there is deformality with the child potentially, and this, that, and the other. And I'm like, well, yeah, but you take it, it's a whole new stretch. They have pushed that goalpost so far to where it's like, oh, you're 5 weeks pregnant and you're trying to get an abortion? Nope.
Oh, too late. And by the way, most people don't even find out.
I didn't even know
until 5 weeks. Yeah,
you don't know.
Yeah,
and so yeah, that's
I've had three pregnancies. I did lose one, but like all out of those three, only one did I discover before 6 weeks. My symptoms didn't show up till 8. So I mean, unless you're like have the app on your phone and you're trying, like it's mm-hmm. so common to not have any idea. And I think that's like. That goes to the total lack of education that these people are coming from. Like when they say, well, you should have an abortion. I've even heard somebody say at 1 week, and I'm like, you realize that you might not even have had sex yet.
Yeah.
At 1 week. That's how they calculate it. Like that's just, it's absolutely absurd how little these people know. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
It is really, really difficult to see them coming down on this as a moral stance. But from the outside, we can see so clearly that they've been manipulated. They've been manipulated to get their, you know, their vote politically. It happens mm-hmm. in Canada too. I mean, I'm Canadian, but we follow it really closely, and we have a very similar things that go on here. We have a lot of like single issue mm-hmm. voters, mm-hmm. And like it can be really upsetting to know that if they've taken a certain stance on abortion issues, it really doesn't matter what the platform is other than that. And that's frustrating too.
Just a lot of manipulation
going on.
Yeah, if I could just expand on that a little bit for Absolutely. Our American audience who probably isn't aware that we just had an election here in Canada. And
you did.
Yes, yeah, yeah. We spent $600 million to end up with almost the exact same government. Parliament that we had
Wow,
before.
That sounds like us here in California. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
It feels good to spend that money, you know?
Yeah, what else were we going to do with $600 million? Maybe get clean water to indigenous peoples all across
the country? Oh, you're asking for too much.
Not even Flint has that yet.
Yeah, but what I wanted to point out is that, yeah, there are so many people who are single issue voters.
Yeah.
We have a far right party called the People's Party of Canada, started by a former member of the Conservative Party that they just weren't conservative enough for him. So he started his own party, and their issue is anti-mask mandates, COVID hoaxism. And they got, I think it was, Aaron, you might be able to correct me, but I think it was around 880,000 votes. Like almost a million people voted for them. And I'm like, I am so shocked.
800,000.
Yeah. Like in Canada's only what, 35 million people?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's
discouraging to see that.
It scared me. And, you know, like for me personally, I am a gun owner. I hunt, I shoot, and I do not agree with the party that I voted for. I don't agree with their platform on sensible firearms legislation, but I agree with them on a lot of other things, right? So I think that we could have a sensible conversation, and I think there are things that are more important, right? And that's what we need more of. We need more people that, you know, it's not just about this one thing. It's about the entire platform and what's best for everybody.
Not only that, like you're right. And I know we need to finish up this segment and move on, but you're right that not only should politics not be a single issue platform, like the way that we approach politics, right? And we see that happen all the time, especially with like the previous two elections. There was a lot of single issue voters. But what piles on top of that is the ignorance of the issue, like what Jenna was talking about, the ignorance of why Christians are or are not supporting abortion or this particular issue or any specific political issue that has absolutely nothing to do with Christian teachings whatsoever. Yeah. Right. So you're right. It's this idea of latching onto one issue, i.e. abortion, coupled with absolutely no idea whatsoever about the history of it, the stats behind it, the process. Like it's all emotional.
It's such an easy win for the politician. It's an emotional kind of thing. Like it's just, yeah, it's go ahead.
Yeah. Well, no, so do we have any closing thoughts on this before we move on?
I feel you, Aaron.
Yeah, I can keep going for like another hour on this one.
Real quick, just on the issue of this single issue voting and how this gets into politics is that the right is so much better at galvanizing behind one topic than folks on the progressive scale. Like we can sit there and debate the minutiae of policy and have a constructive conversation. And, you know, like, hey, we might disagree on this or this, but we can actually have a conversation. But the right is just like abortion, persecute, stop. And they do that so much better than we do. I think that's something that we need to get a little better at. Sorry, Jenna. I'm sorry.
No. We should not, because that kind of closed off line of conversation is exactly why we have these divides. It's because people shut their brains down. They stop actually engaging in conversation, and they just start spouting their, this is my position, and you're not going to change.
False dichotomies make things easy.
Yeah. And it gets the emotions boiling.
Yeah.
So we are going to take a quick little break, and we are going to move on. If you didn't turn into our shows last week, I want to give you guys a little sneak peek of what you guys missed.
They were like, oh, like anyone can really go that long without sex. And I'm like, y'all are not going to die for not having sex.
We're holding an event in a hotel that is rumored to be haunted. Somebody reported that a ghost crawled into bed with her and had sex with her. I don't want that to happen. And not that I think it's likely, but it just makes me I feel a little uneasy.
You're not getting yourself vaccinated. You can have issues with your reproductive cycle. So, ladies, gentlemen, take care of your baby ovens. Take care of your wee-wees, folks. Get the shot.
You know, get involved. Get on that list. Get read out. Maybe if you have a funny name, you'll become the honorable mention.
Unless it's like mayonnaise 55, then don't do it.
Yeah, you call.
Let's not curse each other out. That's unnecessary.
How about you stop telling me what language I can use on my show, learn how to have a conversation where you acknowledge point and stop trying to dodge.
So I don't know about you guys, but I always love seeing that segment and seeing what they come up with for the little bits and pieces that we've missed. So guys, if you've missed those shows, go check them out and maybe catch them live next time too. Okay, so you guys are going to love what's coming up next. I don't know if you've heard, but Kenneth Copeland needs a new plane.
Another one?
So Nate, take it away. Tell us about Kenneth Copeland and his plane needs.
Ooh, Kenneth Copeland needs a new plane. In your direction.
Amen. Thank you.
Before we get into this, can we just acknowledge that Kenneth Copeland's like preacher voice is basically Hulk Hogan?
It is. Right? And he's so
it's
small.
Hulk Hogan. Oh yeah, so... brother. You better buy me a new plane, brother, so I can get around and spread all this misinformation.
All about to air.
That just struck me like right before we taped this show. It dawned on me. It was like the epiphany that led me to realize gods weren't real. I'm like, he's just doing Hulk Hogan. How is he not got a cease and desist letter?
That is how effective he is as a televangelist.
Yeah, I was going to say his property is worth like what? 6 point some odd million? And he's writing it off as a parsonage? Yeah.
Yes. 6.3, last I heard.
6.3 million. Yeah. So it works. Whatever he's doing, Kenneth, dude, keep doing it because it works. Not that I'm for his message because it's a bunch of bullshit. But yeah, in terms of making money, this guy's got it figured out.
He does.
He do. So what we're looking at here is there's a collection of links we're going to have for you guys to look at. We've got one from HuffPost about his plea. We've got a link to the YouTube video courtesy of the Young Turks. And we've also got Mr. Jesse Duplantis claiming that only donations can speed the return of a Jesus Christ.
Okay, tell me exactly how that works.
Okay, I'm sure we're all going to tear this apart here quick.
Yeah. But I'm going to open your wallet.
Yes, open your wallet and give me money.
Benjamins, yeah.
Oh, you watch this interview because it is absolutely bonkers. He's like, well, Jesus, he wants to come back. He wants to come back. But because we live in an economic world, it's all based on money, and you all haven't given us enough money. Like, have you not looked at the assets of the Catholic Church? They're literally the largest private landowner in the world. They're worth billions, tens of billions. Oh, man. Anyway, I'll let you guys riff on that. But before I do, I just wanted to run through and quickly recognize that Kenneth Copeland needs this plane to circumvent public health policy, okay? Because COVID vaccines are the mark of the beast. So before we turn it over to my lovely, talented panelists, I wanted to really quickly go over a couple of other things that Christians have claimed are the harbingers of the apocalypse, right?
Ooh,
other marks of the beast. Are you ready? Yes, okay.
There's more than
so one. We Taking have notes. Fingerprinting, credit cards, the Roman Emperor Nero, Monster energy drinks, microchips, Iron Maiden albums, space travel, East Indian monkey gods, and vaccines.
Space travel. Yes.
Monkey gods.
Yeah. East Indian monkey gods. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is okay. So all the different things that people attribute to the mark of the beast. And there's so much more than just that.
Put them in the comments, folks. Let's get a mark of the beast claim going. I need to see that.
Like in the Bible, it says a mark either on their forehead or their wrist, right? Or something like that. So how can any of these, even the vaccine, qualify as the mark of the beast?
Okay. Because Jesus.
anytime I hear someone say the mark of the beast, I throw up a little bit in my mouth.
Same.
You might be possessed. That could be.
The mark of the beast.
I have lived through several like almost apocalypses. I don't know about you guys, but I grew up with this stuff. Like it used to be credit card, like chipped credit cards. And I'm actually really curious whether Kenneth Copeland would be, you know, worried about the credit cards. I don't think he would. I think he would take all of it. It's really, really bizarre too. Like anything that causes you to fear monger, and like you can twist it and like get anything to work with that idea of like, and it's always really interesting to me how it's always something something that is very like political, or like it's always like I don't know. I don't even know where to start with this. Like, it's just a very obvious to me that people don't actually know like what the Bible talks about, like what it actually teaches, because that's not even what it means, people. That's not what it means.
No. But I also
it doesn't mean
know.
The vaccine or the vaccine passport or like anything that it has nothing to do with that.
We were just talking in the previous segment about how little the Bible actually matters to these people.
Yes, like, yeah. It's just an excuse not to like participate in society. Is it's the mark of the beast. It always is.
So
it's frustrating.
I want to talk more about like, so yeah, there's this sort of acknowledgement that like a lot of these people don't really understand the Bible. But what gets me more, what really shocked me is how many different excuses he's come up with for needing this plane. And there doesn't seem to be any like memory among his congregants of A, how often
that's
he's asked.
Because they're
things.
All senior citizens. A lot of the senior citizens.
Or just they bought the new excuse people. Every time. Yeah. So there was one excuse was that he didn't want to have to sit next to people because he gets too much attention or asks too many questions.
He didn't want to have to talk to them.
I mean, he's given multiple. And on one video, he was like, for a previous jet that he's bought, he's like, well, I just had to. It was so dang cheap, right? So, like, I kind of.
Jets are pretty cheap, folks.
Didn't he call it? Didn't he say once too, that, like, he can't take commercial flights because it's a demon tube or something? Like,
yeah,
he has
demon,
to try to keep himself clear of demons. Demon like, it just is unbelievable, the stuff that he says.
Yeah. So it's just the latest in a string of excuses for why he needs these luxuries. And to me, it was almost not even the most important thing about the article. So I'm gonna let you guys talk about it a little bit longer, but there was one thing that caught me that has nothing to do with his luxurious spending habits that just floored me with this article. But first I want to hear your guys' thoughts on it.
Sorry.
I want to talk more about East Indian monkey gods than Kenneth Copeland, but I guess we'll stay on topic. Fine.
Yeah. I mean, I
just
want to
make one quick point.
Okay. So Aaron, go ahead.
One quick point that I wanted to make, because I already brought it up once, is that what really, really makes me irate about someone like Kenneth Copeland and the many other people who are out there is who their demographic is.
And the way they take advantage of them.
Yes. And if you look up anything about the strategies that they use, they are basically, they're taking advantage of people who are often in their older years, who are lonely, who maybe don't have the bigger information of things. So it's very, very easy to manipulate them. And there's so many stories of people who have had, you know, their grandma or whoever pass away, and they realize that they're actually been sending them thousands of dollars. In some cases it's well over, like it's pretty well their whole, you know, retirement savings. Like, and it's because there's this constant like pressure from these televangelists to continue to send more money in, and they're using they're
abusing
this idea that like the more you give, the more you'll be blessed. You can't expect, you know, these if you love your family, basically, if you want your family to be okay and healthy and saved, you need to, it's the seed and harvest. It's like a whole type of preaching, like the bigger your seed, the more you harvest, and that it's all about stepping up in faith. And like these people just get totally raked over the coals financially.
The term is prosperity gospel.
Yes,
it is the way of which you preach, you know, the coming of Jesus, and you eventually going to receive that blessing. Keep waiting. God's coming.
It's coming. It's coming. Or it came in a form that you're not familiar with. Like, you just didn't acknowledge it, right?
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. Or you just, you know, it's a blessing under the... Oh, I fucking hate that. I'm sorry. A blessing under the sky.
I'm getting so mad over this.
Oh, you just got to look at the people who have preached this prosperity gospel bullshit. Mm-hmm. Like it's guys like Robert Tilton, Oral Roberts, you know, this Joker. Like these are all people who have become fabulously wealthy by bilking you out of your money. And I am curious. Like I know I've heard some of their twisting of actual scripture to support this bizarre this bizarre concept that literally contradicts a direct quote from Jesus that it's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to get into heaven. Like, that's plain as day, folks. Like, you can't even dress that up. It doesn't matter how you translate that from Greek to English. That metaphor is still going to stick. And how their audience is able to reconcile this in their head, it is truly baffling.
It's sad.
It's because they don't read it.
It's sad. Yeah, it is sad. It's really sad.
I have a question for you guys. Pop quiz about the Bible. What did Jesus do, though, when he walked into the synagogue or whatever the place of worship was, and there were people set up there selling their wares and making money and stuff?
Damn, he threw a bitch fit.
Nate.
I spoke out of turn.
No, it's okay.
Because he raised his hand.
What? Yeah. Yeah, because I'm Canadian and I'm polite. No. So, hello. I waited my turn. And, you know, and like, okay. Like these.
No, but that's the point I'm trying to make is like he called them a den of thieves. Yeah, he was all against the making of money in religious name. Yeah. In religion's name. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
the money changes.
Now we go back to the conversation we've had for the last three articles, like all three articles, right? Is the not knowing the Bible, but doing things that go specifically against what it says in the Bible.
Yeah.
Right. And like one of the few things that the Gospels actually agree on, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Where Jesus says to his disciples that some of you won't taste death before my kingdom arrives, before what I've said comes to fruition, right? It's in Matthew 16, Luke, Mark 9, and Luke. It's in three of the Gospels where he says, some of you aren't even going to die before I come back, right? That's completely ignored. The fact that he told people to give away their money and follow him, right? The tax collector,
not all your possessions.
The fact that he got mad in the synagogue, all things that are in direct conflict with the prosperity gospel.
And when he said, give away your money and follow me, he didn't say, give your money to me, let me get richer and follow me,
right.
And then you'll get richer as well.
Right.
What he said give up those worldly things and don't even worry about those worldly things at all. So any pastor that or preacher or representative of God who's raking in this much money is directly in opposition to what Jesus was trying to say.
Yes, I agree with that. And I also think that a lot of these prosperity, I grew up a little bit with a kind of prosperity gospel, but there are a lot of them are using like a much later, like they're using Paul mostly because Paul was going around trying to get people's money as well.
Good Paul.
But it's totally goes against those main requirements for salvation that Jesus had made, or the authors of Jesus or authors attributed to Jesus saying.
I honestly wonder if Paul is the true Jesus, because I just keep thinking like everything that Christians genuinely follow when it comes to women, when it comes to, you know, money and things like that. And I'm like, it's always referencing Paul. This said that Paul said this, said then that.
Call me later. And we can talk about it for 6 hours.
Well, so I've actually heard it in academic circles called Pauline Christianity, because they talk about how Christianity prior to Paul looked completely different. And so they refer to it as Pauline Christianity. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a legitimate.
Well, I think the earliest book in the New Testament is a letter from Paul. It's not the Gospels. I think it's like Thessalonians, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it is Paul. It's all Paul.
That's a whole other conversation that I love talking
about. Yeah, I know. We're gonna be here all night if we get into this.
A bigger, more important point.
not necessarily bigger, more important, just back to the article itself.
Oh, yes.
Just trying to pull us out of some of these rabbit holes and get back on track a little tiny tad bit.
Hey, Johnny told us to go down rabbit holes, Laura. He told us to do it.
We've gone down a few. So
Johnny should be satisfied.
Nate, I'm going to put you in a corner if you don't stop.
Technically, he's in the corner.
Okay. But you are in the corner. I'm going to shove you further into the corner. I'm going to have them put you between me and Jenna. Okay, but there was one other thing about the article that I wanted you guys to touch on or comment on really quick. And then we got to move on to the last article or the last segment. Copeland's wife said that she was quoted in this article as having said, inoculate yourself with the word of God, adding that the flu could be prevented by repeating, I'll never have the flu. I'll never have the flu. Okay, so
cool.
This really bothered me because now you're talking about how these people are educating their congregants on health matters and financial matters and lifestyle matters and all this stuff. and you hear this kind of bullshit, like, just say I'll never have the flu and you'll never get the flu. This yeah. floored me almost as much, if not more, than the whole prosperity gospel. Well, that really, really drives me crazy. But this bothered me as well. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I will.
She's
say
married to the man that thought you could blow away COVID. Why, like, this should not yeah. be surprising.
It's not surprising that she said it, but I know. People are like taking some really bad advice yeah. from these charlatans.
Oh, they are. I will say that I partially agree with Ms. Copeland. Inoculate yourself with the Bible because you need to fucking read it because you don't know what it fucking says. Because if you did, you wouldn't be in this fucking
preach
situation.
Preach it, sister. Preach yes. it. Yes.
Yes. That's amazing. Yeah, I thought it was maybe just like this cute, like, you know, a lot of times they'll use like a cute play on words or whatever. Inoculate yourself with the Bible. I'm like, oh, that could be like considered just kind of a cute title of a sermon. But no, she's actually being serious. She's pushing mm-hmm. like a totally pseudoscientific thing that you can just think yourself. I mean, pray yourself or speak yourself well, which is totally not a thing. That's totally unhealthy. And this is where it crosses into actively harming her congregation or people who are listening. Even if one person thinks that if one person follows her advice, they could die from something, right? Like it's really serious. It's funny. All this is really funny talking about Kenneth Copeland, but this shit is serious when she talks like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Bummer.
Yeah.
So this is the perfect segue into our last segment, because we are going to discuss an article that discusses that atheists may not be as unhealthy compared to theists as was once previously thought. So
look at this now, skin.
Yeah, mm-hmm. maybe it's because we don't just pray away the flu. We actually take medicine and do something about it. Maybe we stay home from work. I mean, okay. So let me get off my high horse and get into the article. Okay. So this article is written by Bob. I'm going to butcher his last name. It's Smetana or Smetana. And he discusses how there were previously articles and studies have been written and released that suggested that being religious made you more healthy or that it could be good for your health. And what he was finding is that when you look at the data, it actually shows that the distinction between religious people and non-religious people in terms of health is not there, that you're not necessarily more healthy just because you are religious. In fact, he quoted someone, he quoted David Speed, sorry, as saying, if you compared the health outcomes between those two groups, they're really very similar to each other. So maybe not the great, great news that, yay, it's absolutely way healthier to be an atheist than to be religious. There's a lot to be said here in terms of whether or not spirituality plays into your health at all. Or if it does, if there's necessarily a benefit for being spiritual, or if the benefit is just a little bit more ambiguous than that. So what do you guys think about the idea that being an atheist doesn't make you quite as unhealthy as was once mm-hmm. preached?
I would say the overall point, and I don't know if this is necessarily a pushback, but I think the overall point is that, you know, one's own faith or non-faith status is not a prerequisite to determine your health status either. You know, right. People are individualistic and, you know, health is way beyond eating healthy and dieting by all means and exercising. By all means, do so within your limits, because it's individualistic. And I can preach too much about this because I work in this kind of department and I do it all the time. But I can definitely say in my own experience growing up in church and within the Black church, there are very unhealthy habits that occur with food.
Potlucks. Yeah.
It's not a potluck. It is a benediction. That is the word. Okay. And that benediction is full of diabetes, yep. that over-sugared punch.
And heart disease.
Extra greasy macaroni and cheese. Mm, slap your mama good. But even broader than that, it stems from the lack of how we've just been running on this theme, lack of education, lack of knowing what the Bible says, but just generally lack of education, lack of appropriate self-help, lack of knowing how to seek education and know what helps you as far as mental health support, physical support, a whole holistic range of what it means to be healthy for yourself, reading scripture and meditating and thinking that you're talking to some imaginary person won't cure any type of, won't help you with your diabetes, won't improve your mental health status. Maybe, you know, I mean, meditation has its effectiveness of that calmness and what have you, but that alone does not improve yourself. And I'm not necessarily saying that just being an atheist improves that either, because there are unhealthy people in general. So I think it's appropriate that this study that was conducted to make people realize that just because you hold on to some faith does not mean that you're necessarily better or have a healthier standpoint on life.
Yeah.
That's what I've gathered.
So one thing that they pointed out that I'd love to hear your guys' take on is they did say that, well, in some cases, some religious people do have healthier, they're encouraged to have healthier lifestyle choices, like not drinking, not doing drugs, not smoking, and that kind of thing. I don't see that as being inherently religious. And they certainly mentioned in the article that it's not inherently religious. In fact, they talk about several other secular groups that do also advocate for those, for abstinence from those things. But what are your guys' thoughts on, like Jenna just said, hey, church groups can be incredibly unhealthy because of some of the practices that they promote. But then there's also the side of, well, they also promote these healthy practices like abstaining from alcohol and drugs. So what are your guys' thoughts on
that? Again, I go ahead, Aaron. No, you go first.
Oh, I was just, okay. So in my experience, it can be either way, and it's a big mixed bag. I mean, I also had a upbringing where we had believed in faith healing and all sorts of things. So that absolutely had a negative impact overall on my health for many years. And I shared that longer story elsewhere, but I appreciated the part in the article where he says that the religious framework is irrelevant, because I think one thing that the religious organizations have done well is to facilitate community and social support.
Yeah.
And
true.
I think that is, like he said, the religious framework is irrelevant. The fact is that people need community and they need social support, and like not everybody needs a big huge community. I know for myself, like I really enjoy just having like a few close friends, and that's it. So for me, shedding my religious belief and getting rid of the existential kind of dread that I felt as a Christian who thought that Jesus was coming back any day, I also struggled a lot with my doubt, and so for me, finally kind of putting the cognitive dissonance to rest has been a massive improvement in my health, in physical and mental health, because I just, I'm not carrying around that confusion all the time and like those things that aren't adding up right. But I will say also that the social support is so huge, and I think that can also be maybe it might be a different conversation, but I think one thing I wrote that, what is it like, what does that say about when religious control group or when religious groups shun people or excommunicate people, and how damaging that is for them? The thing that they lost wasn't necessarily their belief. What they lost was their community. I think that has so much to do with people's well-being.
And people underplay how important that is. Like so often it's easy to say like, okay, who cares? You got shunned, leave and go somewhere else, but
go find some new friends.
Yeah. But it's their friend group. It's their family. It's their emotional support group. It's the people that they know and were raised around. And so to rip yourself away from that, sure, people do it all the time and they do it successfully, but to say that it's easy or to dismiss that, you're right in pointing that out. Like when it comes to health, religion has a lot of pros and cons, just like atheism or any lifestyle has a lot of pros and cons. But one thing, like,
I'm just not surprised by this study that we're like, oh, well, I guess it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter like what your religious position is. That's exactly. Not a good indication for your overall health or well-being. And that makes total sense to me. Of course not.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah. And I mean, there's pros and cons to religion, and there's pros and cons to atheism, but there's no pro to religion that you can't get elsewhere, right? There's cons to religion that are unique to religion, like believing things for no good fucking reason. That's one. But, but you know, any pros that you get from religion, as you guys are saying, community, you can get it elsewhere. There's nothing unique to religion. They haven't got the market cornered on anything.
Yeah. No, you're right. No. They don't have the market cornered on it, but their marketing is very good.
It is. Yes, I'll give you that.
So you do have to seek out, like when I first dropped religion, I had no social group for a while in terms of ideology, right? It took me a long time to find the first online atheist groups. And I still don't belong to any in my area because I'm in such a small area. Yeah. So, I mean, I have friends who are atheists, but I don't belong to a community. Yeah. So I think they do. They don't own the market, but they own a big, huge chunk of it. And I think that that can really speak to our need to get out there and build strong.
We're taking it back. We're taking it back on the nonprofits today.
Can I make one more quick comment about that? Isn't it funny that a lot of the criticism that comes from the Christian community is that they are upset that atheists are creating community? Like, why do you care so much about this? Well, because we are still human beings and we still need connection and people to, you know, that get us and maybe even get specifically where we're coming from as somebody who, you know, whatever is, has been affected by religion in any way. And then we don't, you know, we think it's harmful. Maybe I think it's kind of almost funny now when there's so much criticism put against atheists who are trying to build community. Cause we're like, of course we are, like, humans need humans. We need each other. And so, yeah, building community. Yeah. That's what we're working for.
Exactly. And that's the overall point, right? I genuinely feel, and Johnny has said that, Johnny P has set this for this particular show itself, the nonprofits. Even the atheist community also as a whole, we strive for positive atheism. Mm-hmm. We strive for outreach and community and reaching those that don't have that refuge, that are seeking support, that need guidance and help and just, you know, love. Just love on each other. That's pretty much almost the same language as faith uses, really. I'm going to love on you. I'm going to put my hands on you. We do that too.
It's not
but
Thursday.
Better.
In a totally not weird way.
Way less.
Not Thursday way. Dang it.
Right? We're not going to tell you point. That you need to change who you are just to be our friend.
Right. Exactly.
Like it's a massive difference. So, I mean, like the hope is that we can just continue to build communities and continue to encourage people in their little small pockets of, like, you know, in real life community to start groups and let's start, like, we don't have to be ashamed that we are like want to be friends with other atheists. Like, there's a lot that we can have to talk about
that is positive atheism, and that is right.
Yeah let's just stop being ashamed that we're not part of a religion. Start just talking about it and finding other people who also are, you know, even somewhat are like similar to us or even are just willing to have a good conversation about it. Let's go out there and build communities. Like that's what we need. That's what's next, in my opinion.
Yep, absolutely. I think the one thing that this article really gets into that I think we could delve into a little bit more is that they talk about the contrasts of healthy when you're religious and not healthy when you're religious and all other stuff. So one thing that David Speed, who was the one who did the research, was he said some people, including himself, are just not interested in some of these bad habits, right? It's not because of a religion or a lack of religion or anything, and it's not because of the organization he belongs to or anything like that. I just don't want to drink, or I just don't want to do drugs, or, like, for me personally, I have no desire to smoke whatsoever, right? And that's considered a pretty light sort of bad habit, and I just don't have the desire to do it, right? But on the other hand, he talks about how religion, not only because the what he's combating is the idea that it's more healthy to be religious, right? And he points out, and I think one of you guys already brought it up, is that you could actually fall into some unhealthy habits as a religious person. He says in some cases, belief in God might be bad for your health. So they talk about a study there. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
It's Erin put hit the nail on the head pretty much when she said, you know, being a part of this community, we're not trying to change you. You can be yourself. And that's unfortunate cases with most religions, especially the major ones. They strive to change who that person is, but they, you know, blanket it in loving language. Like, we want to love you and, you know, walk you to the right way. Who's to say you're the right way? Who's to say it's wrong for me to be gay? Who's to say it's wrong for me to have sex before marriage? Who's to say I can't do what the fuck I want to do with my body? It's exactly that.
Love it.
Good. This is really good.
Love it. If I could just wrap up real quick.
I already mentioned how I felt about the, you know, the fact that I was affected by faith healing. So you go ahead.
Yeah. I'll be quick because when I saw this article come up And I thought it was a different article that I had heard the Scathing Atheist talking about earlier this week, because there was another study, a British study, that showed that people who reported having no religion in the 2011 census had the lowest rate of death involving COVID-19. So Muslims were at the highest risk. Jewish males were at twice the risk of Christian males. But those who had no religion were the least likely to die of COVID-19.
That's a very interesting correlation. Yeah, that would be something worthy of looking more into. And when you talk about the rhetoric that gets picked up and spread around from religious organization to religious organization, church to church, you know, person to person, it kind of makes sense. Like a non-religious person is more likely to say, well, what does the science say? Or what's the recommendation? Or what's the good healthy thing to do? Exactly. Whereas the religious organization really pushes, this is our perspective. And then people just kind of pick up on it and roll with it. And so not surprising at all, but I would like to see more like data on that and more studies done to correlate those things a little tighter.
This study is really interesting. It's
I'd love to check it out.
I'll send you a link, Laura.
Perfect. That sounds awesome. Do you guys have any other closing thoughts before we wrap this up? I know, Aaron, you wanted to say something about faith healing, and I think that can't be understated.
The tie-in here for me is like that with that last article, especially, is just that when you are part of a group, even though there can be like some benefit to it, like social cohesion and that sort of thing, but you're kind of already being primed to not accept science.
Yeah.
Because when you are being taught that certain things like that are from the world go against your theology, it's really hard to differentiate whether that also implies with whether I should, you know, take my doctor's advice or listen to something else that I believe in my theology. So in that way, I actually did have harm done to me. I didn't take my medication on the advice of someone in my community as an act of faith. I was quite young at the time. I was a teenager, but no one could have warned me that would be like a risk that being in a community, and it's not actually that fringe. A lot of people will say that that's a very fringe thing that happened to you. But I think that if you do read your Bible, which kind of links to all the other articles we went through tonight, is that when you actually read your Bible, you'll see that that is very, very logical that people should take it as from a biblical kind of precedent that they were told that this is actually like what happens if you're a believer. So there's a lot more going on in the minds of people who believe strongly in their faith, whether they've like fully gone through their Bible or not. So that's my tie-in for the night, is that a lot of people who have these really, really strong beliefs maybe don't actually know where their holy books actually say about it. And if they did, they still might make bad choices.
So that kind of, if there's any takeaway that I can see from this specific article, it would be that there's health really has so much less to do with our spirituality and our beliefs than we really like to think that it does, right? So you can be religious and be really, really unhealthy, or make decisions that are really, really unhealthy. You can be an atheist and make just as terrible decisions for completely different reasons. But health in and of itself, in terms of physical health, there's just not a lot of correlation. And like what you guys were saying, it could be you could do harmful things whether you're religious or not religious. But when you're religious specifically, sometimes those harmful encouraged and taught. And that is where, if anything, that's where the danger lies. Okay, so we have had a lot of really, really good articles today, and I want to thank you guys for being on. But before we get going, I do have one more quick announcement to make. We have many fan social media outlets for you guys to get in contact with us, for you guys to get in contact with each other, to keep this conversation rolling. And there was a lot that we talked about tonight that I would love to see rolling on Facebook and on Discord and all that. So, if you guys want to check us out, you can find most of us, on the Atheist Community of Discord by going to tiny.cc/ACD Discord. And there's a lot of people throughout the day popping on and off of there. So pop in at a few different times and check it out and see who's on. We also have a page on Facebook. It's facebook.com/groups/nonprofitslive, all one word. And that is another great place. I do more Facebook than anything else. And so this is where I do a lot of my chit chatting and interacting. But that is a good site to go to for keeping the conversation going or posting your own questions or articles to talk about. Also, if you would like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a Patreon at patreon.com/thenonprofit. If you find yourself already shopping at Amazon, you can also support us by shopping at smile.amazon.com. And all you need to do is select the Atheist Community of Austin as a beneficiary, and then we get a little bit of money back from your purchase, which really helps. So be sure that you use that link. We appreciate all that you guys do, including just being here and listening and being a part of the conversation. Thank you guys so much. We also value your feedback. So if you're not telling us what you think in chat or on Facebook or on Discord or any of those avenues, you can also just send us an email at nonprofits@atheist-community.org. So that's a way to reach out directly to the nonprofits without going through the social media outlets. All right, guys. Thank you guys so much for joining me. It was really great to see you all. I've worked with all of you in the past in different ways, and I'm sure we will work together in the future. But it was a pleasure. And audience, thank you guys for tuning in and chit-chatting and interacting with us. It was great, and I enjoyed myself. And until next time, I will see you guys later.
Watch The Atheist Experience live Sundays at 4:30 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/ytaxp and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callaxp.